Well, here we are. 2 weeks left in the regular season. Welcome into the Green Zone Blitz, the podcast. Jamie and I, Britt and Gray, on a week where we now know the Rough Riders have nothing to play for other than pride because they are into the West Final, clinching it with a 27-19 victory over the Toronto Argonauts. Well, before we get to the questions, though, Britton, done. That is got to be a relief for Corey Mace and company that they've polished that off. They've clinched first and can strategize a little bit in these final two games to make sure everybody is as fresh as possible for that West Final November the 8th.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how it was done. It's the fact that it is done. This team now has the ability to get healthy. That's the key. You can rest some guys. Make sure we're talking about Trevor Harris's arm a little bit. Just he can get that loose and ready to go and not throw as much over these next couple of weeks. Just it's about now getting healthy. As you mentioned, strategize a little bit. But this is where this team wanted to be. They didn't have to... They would love to go into it on a five-game winning streak, beating teams by 30. That's not what happened, but they are more than happy to just finish first place. And hey, don't you tell Josh Bell this is a nothing week. Don't you say that this is something that they go through the motions with.
I don't think he appreciated my line of questioning on Monday. Because I asked him a lot about, you know, well, what's it like to get guys? Some guys are in, some guys are out, and try to balance rest and rust. And he's like, he actually said he hated this time of year. He was like, I hate this. I hate any notion that's going to be put out there that we're taking our foot off the gas. And pretty much said it. If you're on the field, the expectation remains you're out there to win football games. And if you're not out there to do your best and do what's asked to play at the Rough Riders' highest ability, there's the door. And also, Corey May said something on Monday. I kind of reflected on his comment on saying some guys might have expected to get an extra day off. Wasn't happening. We cannot have complacency set in because they played Friday. They get 2 days off, and then they practice Monday in a regular week. But after clinching, that was Thanksgiving Monday, so could have been the good on you boys. You clinched first. Mm-hmm. Let's take Thanksgiving Monday off and get back to work. But he was, nope, that's not what we're doing. You keep the foot down. Do what you've done all year. No extra special treatment. And he didn't want the Gatorade shower even because he felt that was, you know, something to be done when you accomplish something. And yes, they did accomplish something, but really their end accomplishment is hoisting a trophy and drinking out of it, not getting a Gatorade bath in October when there's still a lot of football to be played. So I kind of like the attitude being set forth here by the coaching staff.
Yeah, that's the culture Corey Mace has brought. That's the culture this team has embraced. And in a short time, just 2 short years, they've really turned the ship around. And frankly, what was a franchise needing it? It needed a refresh. Fans were jumping ship. They had seen enough. They needed changes. And changes came, but not as much as people were hoping for at the time. But a culture change was really all that was needed. They've done it. And also, Corey, that 10 out of 10 stiff arm you threw, that was impressive from a D lineman.
That was Corey Sheets in the Grey Cup type stuff that he, with the stiff arm on Micah Johnson and Sean Bain Jr. I asked Sean about that, and Mike is like, okay, we're doing this. And Sean looked at him and went, we? they had a little, Corey Mace did talk to, I guess, them afterwards a little bit, and they knew what his attitude was, but there was a little talking to about the Gatorade thing, the attempted Gatorade shower on the head coach after that game. But there's a lot more to come on that culture change because things aren't changing in Saskatchewan for a few more years. But first, let's get to some of the questions you sent our way at GreenZoneSK, at Jamie and I, at Britton Gray on social media. That's where you can find us each and every week and send us your question. This one from Govind. I was looking at Ouellette's game log. His average before Tate got hurt in week 4, I'd consider changing the ratio and adding Tate for the West Final if healthy. Thoughts? So I also went through the game log of AJ Ollett, and they took on three of the worst rush defenses in the league in the first couple of weeks of the season. They remained that way throughout the back half of the season as well. So I'm not one of those big games was against BC, and BC's defense at the start of the season was absolutely putrid. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take a pause on going, that was all Trevion Tate, because overall, the numbers aren't too much of a fall off. Last 2 weeks, maybe a bit, but hey, they had over 100 yards rushing last week because of not only AJ Ollett, but Thomas Bertrand Houdon's work. So I'm not sure if you flip the ratio, because if you flip the, that's a lot of math to try to figure out how things are going to work. And it probably takes away CJ Revis at safety. And I know, Britton, you're not a fan of that.
Yeah, I really like what CJ Revis has brought to that. Now, we were talking before the podcast. We did mention it was against Ottawa and a Toronto team that wasn't playing a lot, that this defense has looked really good. But I've liked what I've seen. Antoine Brooks looks really good at Sam linebacker. You can tell that's the position that he knows and is better suited for. And so I just don't think you change the ratio as much. And to come in and do that, get Tate in there, yeah, you bring it back Nelson Lacombo, but then if he gets hurt again, you have to rechange things. You're moving another guy around. Jackson Ford, we don't know where he's at. This team doesn't have the Canadian depth as it used to, because they're all dealing with some injuries, especially on defense, to make the change. I mean, and speaking of rush, AJ Ollett is still the second leading rusher in the entire CFL. It's not like the run game has completely fallen off. It's still been good. And Peyton Collins, you like his development. You like Philip Gagnon brings another veteran presence there. He's back and healthy. So I don't think you make that change just for the sake of doing it, just to maybe see what happens. But Trevion Tate, getting him back late this year, if something were to happen, that's a pretty good guy to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, at any position along the offensive line. He can play probably four out of the five. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how he'd play at center, but I look and AJ was fresh at the start of the year too. If you're looking at those big numbers, he's going to be rested this week, right? To take some hits off of AJ Ollett and get a little bit fresher legs going into the playoffs. So I understand it on the way it looks, but I'm breaking it down and going, I don't think it was a huge drop-off, especially when you look at the teams they were playing early this season, who, again, are in the lower part of the season, the league when it comes to stopping the run. So, hey, Trevion Tate, good player, could play left tackle if necessary, left guard, right tackle. Mm-hmm. A great guy to have around, a great veteran as well. We'll see how it plays out. But I imagine Corey Mace has liked this offensive line group the way it is. We'll see how Philippe Gagnon comes back, because Zach Fry, Britton, he's done probably for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I would think so as well there. Philippe Gagnon coming back was really good timing with the fact that they are losing Zach Fry for probably the rest of the season. And I don't know how many changes you really want to make and add new guys in just ahead of the West Final, because this team's going to be resting starters already. We've already seen kind of the offense, a little bit of stutter, take a little bit of time to get back and going now that you've added Keen Schaefer Baker, Sam Emelis. Took a couple games. Sam Emelis finally had his big game we've been waiting for since he's been healthy. Had that appeared on the NFL show on ESPN there for getting mossed after he mossed a guy. So I just don't know how many changes you really want to make just ahead of the West Final at this point when you've been 12-4 just kind of rolling this out.
Yeah. Gov, thanks for the question. We're not going there with the ratio on four. There'll be four American offensive linemen, which is, I don't even know if that's happened ever in the Canadian Football League. I can't remember it off the top of my head seeing four American offensive line. Well, sorry, since the NFL or the expansion to the United States, when there was no ratio, maybe was the last time we saw that one for the Canadian Football League. As we'll get to the next question, It is from Ty. The offseason is going to be interesting contract-wise with some of the players coming off their rookie deals. Of course, Keyshawn Johnson, Dante Myers, and Bramer. Plus, there's a few more. Who do you think they prioritize first? I'm going to move Bramer aside. He's been good, but I'm not sure with that American guard that they'll be wanting to pay a huge raise or anything to Bramer to hold that spot. I think that money would be better spent on American tackles than a guard. And we've seen a few other guys be able to come in there. Dante Myers and Keyshawn Johnson are going to be interesting. How much more money do they want with their first, you know, 1,000-yard seasons in the Canadian Football League? Where do their agents think they line up for the future of the Canadian Football League? Because they could price themselves out of Saskatchewan, but as we've seen some players go for big money elsewhere, they all of a sudden regret it because it might be not be a good fit in a good system. So they have to be priorities to bring them back. They are talented players. There's no doubt about it, but it would be very interesting to see where they actually fit Britain when it comes to the salary structure.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are questions that this team is going to have to decide after the season, because there's a lot of moving parts, especially in the CFL, where there's just so many guys who often need contract extensions. I mean, we talk about these guys. Sam Emelis, I believe, is only signed through this season. What, you have to bring him back at some point. Keen Schaefer Baker, what, Sean Bain Jr. There's a lot of guys and moving parts about where who gets a discount, who gets less money, who gets more money. Now, I would love to see Keyshawn Johnson stick around. I mean, he's turned into Mr. Second Down with Trevor Harris. He looks to him, he's the most targeted wide receiver in the entire CFL on second downs. But, as you mentioned, it's kind of the, where do you find value? Ajo, what does he request? Del Duncan Busby? Well, like, there's a lot of Canadian receivers here. Someone's getting pushed out somewhere. It'll be interesting how they approach this.
Yeah, Sam Emelis is, of course, only signed through this season, so there's another guy you don't want to lose, although I imagine he'll be going to the NFL tryouts again, and maybe that'll be the same for some of these other American receivers. But, you know, they have a next guy up, it looks like, in Joe Robustelli, and this is what these teams have to do. We've seen the Bombers have to deal with it with Kenny Lawler going to Edmonton 1 year and having to backfill, and Dalton Schoen, Schoen's getting injured, and then they have to backfill, and they have to find a new guy. And they've been able to do it up until kind of this season, but that Canadian stuff on that, like, Nick Dembski has been a huge part of that. He's been that vital piece, and that's where it's like, is that Sam Emelis for this team, is having that one big Canadian receiver that you can rely on in the years ahead, and then you complement around through the draft and everything else, might be the way to do it. But yeah, things get, there's, when you are a good football team, you are going to lose players. There's no doubt about it. You will lose players. It's whether or not you have the next guy up. And I think for the most part, we've seen it this season. They've had the next guy up. They've been able to win games with a lot of guys down this season. So after Jeremy O'Day's contract extension, it could be another very interesting offseason for him to earn that extension.
Well, and let's look at the possibilities. Kyle Hergel, a draft pick, he's kind of bouncing around the NFL camps, and bouncing around teams. We don't know exactly what's going to happen to him. He's kind of still searching for a job somewhere. The entire rookie class outside of Ali Saad all went back to school. This team has rookies coming up next season who will push guys. With another draft class. This team has depth that we aren't even considering right now. So it's going to be interesting next year, because when you have success, you'd love to keep the band back together, but that, it's just impossible in pro sports to consistently do that.
But Todd, to really get to, who do they prioritize first of the three you mentioned, I think it's Keyshawn Johnson.
Yeah, that's... I'm in the same boat. Like I said, he's Mr. Second Down for this team.
All right, Ty, thanks for the question. Yes, contracts is always fun. Jeff wants to know the severity of the injuries. Shane Ray, Dante Myers, Keyshawn Johnson, Tommy Stevens, Roland Milligan Jr. I'm not sure about Shane Ray. I've seen him do some community work stuff. He's got, of course, an arm injury. And it's, I don't know, maybe I'm breaking down the film too much of him walking around, but it does look a little bit like he's using one arm more than the other one. So not sure where that severity is. As for Myers, Keyshawn Johnson, and Milligan, I'm being optimistic based on what Corey Mace has kind of hinted after the some games, what we've seen from them walking around. I'm going to guess they're in the West Final, Britain, but what do you think?
I'm also in that boat right now in terms of just trying to guess. Corey Mace isn't giving us anything about the severity because, I mean, he wants teams to spend some time looking, trying to prepare for everyone, even if they're not playing. He's not going to give that that little tidbit out ahead of the West Final this far out. All these guys, as they're not on scooters. They're not walking around on crutches or anything that we've seen. Now, Keyshawn Johnson, admittedly, we haven't seen yet. And Roland Milligan, though, people did text you after the game, texted the show. Corey May said he talked to Roland Milligan, seemed in high spirits and everything, didn't seem down. So that's good news. But I would expect to see them all ready for the West Final, which is why this was so key for this team to lock up first place. Because now you have some time to get these guys. Go live in the training room. You stay with the doctors for 2 weeks.
And the reason, like, you think about it, right? Like, if they would have lost, now you're playing Winnipeg, who has something to play for, then BC after that. So it could have gone a little bit interesting and weird down the stretch run. But now that they have it solidified with that all-important 12th win, yeah, it's big to be able to rest these guys up. Tommy Stevens, that's we've seen him on the sidelines during games, hyping guys up and stuff, but haven't seen him back on the roster. Won't play again this week. But again, another guy we're thinking it isn't like a done for the season type injury, but you never know with a knee injury what the severity of that's going to be.
Yeah, like I said, all interesting, but this is the importance, and can't wait to see what this team's lineup looks like come the West Final, because it might be the healthiest this team's been all year.
Yeah, heck, I can't wait to see what the lineup looks like for Winnipeg on the guys that are resting. So there you have it. Thanks for the questions here on the Blitz podcast. Send them our way. We've mentioned this a few times, that the biggest news in Saskatchewan this week, outside of clinching first, of course, was the extensions signed by the general manager, Jeremy O'Day, and the head coach, Corey Mace, linked at the hip for the next couple of years. They were under contract for next year, but instead of worrying about going into next year, it was, let's lock them in. They're signed through 27 and the 28 season. So 3 more years after this one. They've worked well together. They didn't really know each other all that well, other than, you know, Corey Mace scoring a touchdown on a play that Jeremy O'Day was blocking against him when they were playing back in the day. But they've worked well together. They gelled. They built a culture. They bring in talent like Jeremy O'Day. They're coaching them up in Corey Mace. I don't think there is anybody who's criticizing this move. It feels like a no-brainer that these two get extensions.
Absolutely, it is. Like you said, you mentioned the culture change. It just feels completely different in just 2 seasons, how this team approaches things, how they approach practice, how everything is done. It's just been so different, and it feels winning. And it has been winning. Look on the success of the field. They were in the West Final last year. They're hosting it this year. You reward production in this, and plus for Craig Reynolds, you have to think maybe he's thinking ahead. If this group wins a Grey Cup here, he might be paying a little bit more to keep Corey Mace and Jeremy O'Day. So get ahead of that while you can.
Yeah, it could be a smart business decision as well for the Rough Riders to get this done now, just in case they roll into next year. And it's like, okay, there'd probably be a lot more, you know, calls being made to Corey Mace from somewhere else, but You have these two guys locked in. Good on them. I went on the rant on the Green Zone already about the O'Day detractors from a few years ago. We don't have to go through the whole history, but he was pretty much linked to Craig Dickinson as the next head coach of this team after Chris Jones pulled a fast one, signing his guys to extensions before bolting to the NFL. You'll never be able to tell me that that was just a coincidence. Nobody will be able to convince me of that, that Chris Jones did that knowing full well he was off to the NFL to make – he takes care of his guys, and it looks like he did in that scenario. So Jeremy O'Day gets all of a sudden, okay, now you're the GM. Everybody was hired already around the CFL. So anyways, so that happens. Jeremy O'Day finally gets a full coaching search in, and he hit a home run. He's batting 1,000 when it comes to coaches he gets to hire, when he gets to interview them in full and has a full lay of the land after, you know, interviewing Buck Pierce and reaching out to Scott Milanovich during that process. And heck, that might be, you know, three of the final four teams with those coaches. But Corey Mace has been everything and more. And not a lot of people in Saskatchewan knew of Corey Mace. I didn't. We're getting to know him. He's a great community guy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's for Corey Mace on that side of things, it has been a perfect hire. It seems like just the perfect, just the way he conducts himself. Corey Mace seems like a prairie guy to me. It doesn't it? Like, he just feels like a prairie guy. Even though he's a West Coast guy, he feels like a prairie guy.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's, my all or nothing this week is going to be on the extensions, and it's been fun to go back, listen to his introductory press conference and what he talked about there. And when you look back, it was, as you said, kind of a little bit out of nowhere. Everyone knew who Buck Pierce was, the success that he had in Winnipeg. Scott Milanovich has been a head coach, and it was like Corey Mace, this defensive coordinator, and the entire time you were both hearing, don't count out Corey Mace. As soon as he gets a chance, as soon as they talk, that it could work. And Corey Mace has proven why he kind of has really flown up the coaching rank so quickly. Wasn't a defensive coordinator long, and then all of a sudden he's a head coach. And it's the personality, it's how he conducts himself. He's a winner, and he's also embraced Saskatchewan, as Saskatchewan's embraced him. He talked about the fact he really knows nothing about hockey, and the community's helping his kid get into hockey and helping with equipment and stuff. And it feels like an extended family here in Saskatchewan. I think they love it here. And that's really a credit to his personality and just the type of guy he is, because as you mentioned, so much community work. It's really important for him and his family to give back to the communities they're in.
So those are those extensions signed. Should there be another one on the table soon for Trevor Harris?
Before we go to Trevor Harris, I just want to say, how crazy is it? Jeremy O'Day will have spent 30 years with one team.
When this is done?
When this extension's done, it'll be 30 years since he first joined Saskatchewan as an offensive lineman. Or 29, I think it takes him to, because I think he 99 he joined, right?
Yeah. Well, it would be his 30th year in 08.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think of Hugh Campbell with the Edmonton Eskimos. Might have been around that long. Maybe not. He went to the NFL, of course, but then he came back as manager. That would be in there somewhere. But, yeah, like Wally was in Calgary, but then he went to BC. That'd be some that okay, Rob Vanstone. There's the challenge. Find that guy on 30 years with an organization as a manager, coach, or player.
It's been quite the run.
Well, his daughter, who's now a Division I athlete, like Britton, I remember these kids. I remember them in strollers at practices. Like that he had, like, his, you know, his wife and his, like, his Sun Tzu's playing football. It's like I remember them as like babies around Taylor Field, and here they are now Division I athletes and everything else, and high caliber sports. So then I think that matters. I really do think it matters, and that's why I wasn't like I'm not throwing Jeremy O'Day. I think consistency matters in organizations. That guys just aren't going to get fired like that after one, maybe even two. Like people in Calgary saying, get rid of Dave Dickinson. I'm like, what? Like that makes no sense on what that organization has done with him in the organization. So good on him. Deserved it. Now are you going to answer my question? Should Trevor Harris be the next one with an extension?
I do believe so. With the season he's had, the fact that he is the leader, that this is the, Corey Mace signed up to have coach this team with Trevor Harris as its quarterback. That's what he signed up for. That was something he made sure to mention back, as mentioned in his introductory conference. Trevor Harris was a reason he wanted to be here. He felt like the roster was good with him. He's still playing at a high level. I do think you sign him. I am concerned about it 40 years old next year. I know Trevor Harris is in better shape than a lot of people I know. Trevor Harris takes care of his body really well. Father Time is undefeated. He might play till 45. I'd say he won't, but he might do it. You need to focus on, if you're bringing Trevor Harris back, you need a clear path forward from that. Is that Jake Mayer? Do you commit to Jake Mayer? Jack Cohn, do you commit to Jack Cohn as being the next one? I think you need a succession plan in place, and maybe you have to move off Trevor Harris before he moves off, because he said he might not never stop playing.
I don't know. I succession plans sound good. It's a fun thing to say, but it's impossible to predict.
Yeah.
It's absolutely impossible. You think a lot of things, right, as a manager. Jason Moss and Danny Maciocia thought a lot of things. And remember, they had Caleb Evans in front of Davis Alexander on their depth chart. Remember that. And then Caleb Evans goes down, and then they go, oh, damn. Like, they like Davis Alexander, just like the Riders that like Jack Cohn. Just like the Riders that had Darian Durant. Darian Durant wasn't the succession plan. Darian Durant was the third-string quarterback behind, you know, Marcus Crandall and those guys. It wasn't until injuries happen and they go, oh, damn, look at what he can do. Interesting. Let's keep looking. Then they traded for Michael Bishop that year, even though Darian was you have your thoughts on guys. Bo Levi Mitchell was the third string quarterback in Calgary. They thought he had talent, but it wasn't until an injury happened. Mike Riley almost got cut by the BC Lions if it wasn't for one final drive in Regina, and he turned into a Grey Cup champion quarterback. You never know until a guy gets, especially in the CFL, until that guy gets it. So Trevor Harris isn't letting anybody through.
No, nope.
And it takes injury. It really does. Unfortunately, take a lot of times it takes injury for the next guy to stand up. And it might be not the next guy. It might be the next guy. Right. Jack Cohn might think, but then you have this other guy who's been around for a year and oh, damn, he looks real. We liked him, but geez, he's picked things up a lot more than we've considered. So that's my point. Are you going to go into a season with, let's hope we have the right guy, or go into a season going, we have a guy who was on pace last year for 5,000 yards passing and got us to the West final in first place. I don't understand why anybody wants to quit that guy, even if it's Bo Levi Mitchell, who is a free agent this offseason. But dance with the devil, you know, with this one. Or maybe they have something else up their sleeve that we don't even know about. So speaking of Trevor Harris, They did beat the Toronto Argonauts last week. Still callers to the postgame show want more. They wanted to beat the Argos by 50, apparently, rather than a 27-19 win. And Harris will get rested this week, we think, with A.J. Ouellette. Micah Johnson, we know for sure, are getting rested. We talked a bit about the Toronto game already, but rest is very important for this football team, Britton.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what this team needed at this point, to get healthy, get some rest in. And yeah, listen, that Toronto game was closer than myself and a lot of people thought it was going to be. It was funny because after the game and even after days, people are saying, well, Jared Daigie, maybe the Riders should take a look at him as a future backup or see what he can do. The Ryan Dinwiddie system is undefeated, it seems. He can plug and play pretty much anyone in there. And they look like gosh darn. Cam Dukes was another guy. Looked great in Toronto. Daryl Davis thought they should bring him in. Has been cut everywhere else he tries to catch on. So the Dinwiddie system really can hide a lot, apparently, offensively. But yeah, as you mentioned, rest. This team gets the opportunity. A.J. Ouellette's not playing. Micah Johnson's not going to play this week. We can go through the list. But it was needed for a team, especially a veteran team like this that has been dealing with injuries to key spots lately.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what that depth chart looks like on Thursday. But the guys that are coming in, they do. Everybody's played this year. Like, it's not like you're throwing up a bunch of guys who haven't played this year. I can't think of one guy on the roster who's going to actually get their first reps. Maybe the kicker, Michael Hughes, if he kicks instead of Brett Lawther. Yeah. Braden Knoll has played. He hasn't played center, even though he'll be the center. Washington played earlier this year off the edge at tackle, if he's in for Jermarcus Hardrick. So, well, a lot of these guys have played and have gotten game day reps already. Braden Knoll's probably the one with the least amount of experience as the center for the Rough Riders. Although all his snaps have looked good. The silent count they've been working on have all looked good. So we'll see how that looks like against the Bombers. The CFL Awards, the team nominations are going out. Britton Gray is a voter. I can't disclose all the other voters. I'm not sure if I'm allowed as a vice president of the Football Reporters of Canada. I do not vote until the next round as a national panelist. So we have all the local people. It's four local media members. And the coach. Those are the five voters, although no coach really likes doing this, so as I found out. Okay, let's go backwards. We'll end with MOP. Most outstanding special teams player.
Special teams player, I'm going with Nick Weeb. Nick Weeb has been really solid for this team on special teams. What?
I thought you were going to go with your guy. I thought you were going to go Jorgen Hughes.
I really want to. He's probably my second choice. But Nick Weeb, it's also kind of the story with Nick Weeb. He's dealt with a bunch of serious knee injuries, and he's finally been able to put together a fairly healthy season. This Riders, a special teams group, has been really good. I don't think we've talked enough about how they've really kept returners under wraps and some really good ones this season. They've done a really good job of that, and Nick Weeb has helped lead the way there in that regard.
Yeah. If I had a vote, yeah, you almost talked me into Jorgen Hughes the other day. I was like, you know, after all he's been through, you know, that injury and, you know, stuff that happened in Saskatoon, and man, do you give him just a plug? You know, he's been so consistent every single year as one of the top long snappers.
Yeah, he's...
I almost would love to see it.
He is top notch. I mean, maybe you're talking me into it. I haven't voted yet, so I still have some thinking. So I'm going to give you some him and haws on some of these because I'm still debating internally where I want to go.
He is a specialist, and he's really good at it. Okay, because Mario Alford probably will get a little bit, but I don't, he's didn't play some days, and I like Nick Weeb as well. Most outstanding offensive lineman. I think the nominees have to be down to Bramer, Hardrick, and Logan Ferland.
Yeah, this is one of those where I'm hemming and hawing. I have to take into account, Logan Ferland hasn't played a lot of center before this year. He got thrust into the position, a position he's never really done. They haven't missed a beat with him out there. Jamarcus Hardrick has been really, really good. He has been really good at right tackle, and he's probably been the most consistent offensive lineman the Riders have had all year. Bramer, good, but just doesn't pop off the page like those two quite yet.
Yeah, I'd go Hardrick one for as like, you know, you talk about the center stuff for Logan Ferland. Yes, difficult. Absolutely, but I think I don't have access to the grading of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, but I'd be guessing Jamarcus Hardrick has been, you know, one, Ferland two, Bramer three on that grading list. So we go from offensive lineman. Let's go to rookie.
It's Peyton Collins.
Pretty two, right? Ollie Saad and Peyton Collins are about the only two that.
Yes. But our twos who played a lot. How many are there in total? Eight. There's eight options this year for the Riders.
Yeah, veteran Mario team. Anderson, no. Veteran team. Yeah, Peyton Collins, Ollie Saad will be 1-2 on that one. Who's the top Canadian? Let's go. Is this a debate? Do we fight? Like, what are we thinking on top Canadian?
This is another one. I said there's a couple really close ones in my head. At first, I was Tavon Campbell, and now I think AJ Allen is the top Canadian this year.
That is the right decision.
Now that the ballots have been out,
the right decision.
Been putting a lot more. I've been thinking a little bit more about it, really debating. That's why I don't just fill this out as soon as I get it. I like to spend a few days really think about it, look through the stats, look through impact plays, think back about who's had the memorable plays. Tavon Campbell has more memorable plays, but AJ Allen recently and what he does on a whole bunch of different things, he's been really good and maybe not talked about enough.
He's chasing down Jameer Thurman for the most defensive tackles on this team, most defensive plays on this team, three tackles for loss, four knockdowns, three interceptions, three forced fumbles, four quarterback sacks. For AJ Allen, along with four special teams tackles and 75 defensive tackles. Yes, Tavon Campbell leads the league in interceptions, tied with Stavros Katsantonis, who I love saying his name, and McFadden out of Toronto, but I'd go AJ Allen as number one for the top Canadian. Top defensive player. Is AJ Allen up for this one as well, Britton Gray?
Boy, there are four guys I'm heavily debating on this. This is my current mindset. As I mentioned, I could change my mind by the time I actually hit submit. I'm going with Jameer Thurman as number one. I think he is the leader in the middle of that defense. Yes, he what he does so much communication-wise, getting guys in the right spot. He's been making key plays as well, getting some big interceptions. Number two, I've been leaning more Malik Kearney in recent days as well. Just the pressure they've been able to get with him and how good he's been. He's been really, really solid. Pressures even. Just getting quarterback pressures has been key. But then AJ Allen, Tavon Campbell, you can make arguments for those guys as well.
Yes. I'm just trying to bring up the Riders' defensive plays overall. When you look at Malik Kearney, seven sacks, one forced fumble, three knockdowns, one fumble recovery, two tackles for loss for Malik Kearney. Roland Milligan Jr. started to rise. CJ Revis has a lot of defensive plays as well. But I don't know. I think Malik Kearney has been so dynamic off the edge. I think he's like his seven sacks. I don't even think tell the tale on what he's been able to do off the edge. But I agree. For me, it would be Malik Kearney, Jameer Thurman, and AJ Allen would be the debate for me. I just think Malik Kearney, I think he grades out so well each and every week in his one-on-one battles along that defensive line. But Jameer Thurman, is 81 defensive tackles enough for a middle linebacker? I'm torn on that. But he's had a great year, right? Mm-hmm. So he's fourth in the league in tackles right now behind Darnell Sankey, Tony Jones, and Micah Alway of the BC Lions, who's having a great year in the middle for BC. So
that's because teams can't run on this team this year, so they abandon it, so Jameer Thurman doesn't get the opportunity to make as many tackles
as some other linebackers. That's true. A lot of leads. That's true. That's a good thought. That's a really good thought, Britton. A lot of leads, so a lot more passing than they would be rushing for or against this Rough Rider defense. Yeah. Again, is there a wrong answer? I don't think there is. Not for defensive player of the year.
No.
Now we go to another interesting debate, which is the most outstanding player for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Who you got?
Oh, this is a tough one. Another one that I'm debating because I right now I want to put Trevor Harris down because, A, the quarterback, and he's been really good. His bad games recently are 82% and 340 yards. That's what he threw for recently. And we're like, that's not a good game from Trevor Harris. Not enough touchdowns. And, yes, you want to see more touchdowns, but he had that streak of he completes at a high percentage. He's the straw that stirs the drink for this offense. But, boy, A.J. Ouellette. His running ability, his pass blocking, the heart he showed on that run is MOP type stuff, or that tackle to chase down is MOP type stuff that I always take into account as well. And he's been really good. Then you could Jameer Thurman if you feel like that, Malik Kearney if you feel like that, right? It's another one that it's really tough. I hate defaulting to the quarterback. It's something I hate when it comes to rewards. But just how efficient Trevor Harris has been this year, it's tough to really take it out of his hands right now.
Yeah, the thing that hurts AJ Ouellette is his yards per carry is lower than Brady Oliveira and Justin Rankin and James Butler and Dedrick Mills, but he's been a workhorse. He has the most carries in the Canadian Football League at 237. So he's been an absolute workhorse for this Rough Rider team. Let alone, you know, scoring 9 touchdowns this season, which is up there near the top of the table in the Canadian Football League. So I lean more towards AJ Ouellette, but it's hard to ignore Trevor Harris, who's third in the league in passing. He's right behind Nathan Rourke in passing yards and in touchdowns. So if you're concentrating and looking at Nathan Rourke as the MOP, which a lot of people now are, Trevor Harris has a better percentage, is 100 yards shy in passing, 3 touchdowns shy. He's thrown less interceptions. He's just as efficient, and he's got, two more wins. And the team's got 3 more wins than the BC Lions.
And Nathan Rourke has had to throw a lot because that BC Lions defense was putrid for a lot of this season.
Yeah. So Trevor Harris is right there when it comes to the numbers when compared to a lot of people that are having Nathan Rourke put up MOP. Yeah. As much as I hate going quarterback, I was starting to slide toward AJ Ouellette. But I think I finally land on Trevor Harris being the MOP of this team. Anyways, we spent a lot of time here on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Not a lot to talk about around the Canadian Football League, as everybody who was alive last week is still alive this week because the Edmonton Elks, a big upset last week over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Of course, Calgary beats the Hamilton Tiger Cats, so the Montreal Alouettes stay alive to try to track down first place in the East. But let's just get to our picks before we say goodbye this week.
You Edmonton. Don't want to break down the 9-9 tie between all four teams?
If that's still a possibility next week, we'll do it. Okay?
You don't want to wait, spend more time discussing that math?
No. If it's still a possibility next week, we'll talk about it. the Edmonton Elks need a win this week. Things are getting dicey for Edmonton. Almost have to win out here. They take on BC Friday night after the Rider game. I'm going BC. Are you going with another Elks upset?
I really want to, because I really would enjoy the chaos of a 9-9 four-way tie. I don't see it. BC coming off the bye week and how good they've been playing, and just at home. BC's playing for a lot. They want to host the West semifinal. And I also think BC just, they finish it off. That's why we don't want to really get too much into the four-way tie, because we both have BC winning this week.
Yeah. Montreal. Moving on. Sorry, but seriously, Ottawa might be down to their third string quarterback because of Dustin Crum wasn't practicing due to a head injury. He was in concussion protocol, apparently. So it might be Tyree Adamsing it up against the Alouettes,
Davis Alexander was a third string quarterback.
Okay. that is true, but he was in his third year in the Canadian Football League at that time. So he had a lot of experience, you know, ran some offenses a little bit here. But so we're both picking Montreal. Calgary hosting Toronto. Calgary trying to stick with BC for that second spot in the West Division. I think they do it with the way Toronto has been playing. And Calgary with that big win last week was interesting. So maybe they're getting their game back with Dedrick Mills down the stretch running the rock.
Yeah, I'm going Calgary as well. I don't think we have a lot of differentiation this week, because it's late in the season. We know what these teams are. Like Calgary to keep it rolling. And you know they want to keep pace with BC and try to, once again, leapfrog them to host the West Semi. And they want to keep those Bombers off their tail.
Mm-hmm. And we'll wrap up our picks with the first game of the week, which is Friday Night Football. Saskatchewan in Winnipeg. Looks like a Jake Maier game. I almost want to pick the Riders. I really do. Do you?
I do, too. When I started really thinking about what the depth chart's going to look like, the more I'm just... There's a lot of guys here who've started games. This doesn't feel like a normal backup type no-name practice roster guys coming on to play.
The only thing that concerns me is the offensive line, making some changes there.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to pick the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but I'm going to go with a 21-19 game.
Yeah, I just don't see how Winnipeg loses this, especially because the Riders are still sitting some guys, but when I think of the receivers who Jake Maier is throwing to, Sean Bain Jr., Ajo, Del Duncan Busby, Tommy Neal, Joe Robustelli, that feels like a starting lineup almost you could roll out and feel good about it, right? So, but Winnipeg, 24-22. We're right, same sort of thing. Okay. It's going to be close. I don't think this is going to be a blowout a lot of Blue Bomber fans think it's going to be.
Yeah, nothing's come easy for Winnipeg, and I don't think this is going to come easy for Winnipeg either. I think Jake Maier, he hasn't played in a while. I think he's going to be throwing it all over the place. Mario Anderson Jr., I like him as a running back from the preseason. So even if Thomas Bertrand Hudon's getting reps, I think this offense will be able to move the ball against the Bombers, and this defense is still going to be great, I do believe. On Friday. So that's where we'll leave it here on the Blitz Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Of course, you can like, subscribe, share, tell a friend about the Blitz Podcast, where Britton and I break down the Riders each and every week. And of course, I'll see you on the radio at 2 every weekday afternoon, but our Green Zone pregame show is at 4 o'clock on Friday, ahead of that 6 o'clock kickoff in Winnipeg, where the Riders hope to be right back in that state. Maybe, do you think they take something into the stadium and leave it there?
I think penny or something?
Yeah, I think they should. Pick it up in Winnipeg on Grey Cup week. I think that'd be a good omen.
Should they return the Banjo Bowl trophy? I'm sure Winnipeg gave them after the Riders beat them this year. Because surely they gave them the trophy, right? That's what happens.
I don't think they accept.
Every time the Bombers win, the trophy's out there full blast. So what do you mean?
Yeah, I don't think they accepted that trophy, to be honest. But yes, the Riders hope to be back in Winnipeg for another trip later in November. But for now, it's October the 17th again. Pregame show at 4 ahead of that 6 o'clock kickoff. That's it for us here on the Blitz Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.